The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Dear Media IRL is back, and we're showing up bigger, better, and louder than ever. Join us on May 4th in Austin, Texas for the ultimate live podcasting experience. Watch and learn from your favorite Dear Media hosts as they bring their insightful discussions from your headphones to the stage. Get ready to be inspired, entertained, and watch audio get a makeover. Tickets are on sale now at dearmedia.com/IRL. See you on May 4th in Austin, Texas.
Welcome to the Blonde Files podcast. I'm your host, Arielle Lori, and I'm here to talk all things wellness. From how to achieve optimal health and well-being to the best beauty tips and everything in between, no topic is off limits. I know there's so much information out there, so I'm bringing on expert guests and sharing my own experiences to help you sift through all the wellness stuff without the BS. Enjoy the show. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. Today's episode is really special. It's a little bit heavy, but there's so much levity throughout. And I just feel like this is a conversation that so many people need to hear, and there's something for everybody in it. So I'm talking to Kelly Rizzo, and this was kind of full circle because, as we talk about in the episode, we had a little bit of a DM exchange. I think we said it was pre-COVID when she was married to Bob Saget. She reached out. I guess she had a friend who followed me who thought that we had a lot in common. And I responded and said something like, yes, we should hang out. And then things fell through the cracks. And then, you know, she really publicly lost her husband, Bob, and she had to navigate that in the public eye. And she is on the other side of it, and she has just so much wisdom and such amazing perspective when it comes to grief and loss. She has a new podcast called The Comfort Food Podcast, which I am going to be going on as well, where she talks to different people about their experiences with grief. So Kelly is also the founder of Eat Travel Rock. She is a food, travel, and lifestyle expert. And like I said, host of the Comfort Food Podcast. And she is just so candid and so vulnerable. And we go all over the place in this conversation. So we talk about her relationship. We talk about age gap relationships because we both had experience with that. We also talk about being child-free by choice. I loved talking to her about this because it is just not often that I meet other people who are around my age in their 30s or 40s who don't want kids. And I know that this is kind of becoming a more popular subject. I think more and more people are making that decision for themselves. More women are making that decision for themselves, but it does not come without judgment, put it that way. So I thought it was really interesting to hear her perspective on that. We talk about the loss of Bob, and she kind of walks through that day. So I guess a trigger warning. I also talk about the day that I found my friend. If you guys have listened to my podcast, then you know what I'm talking about. But we do talk about that. So just be warned. We talk about navigating grief. We talk dating again, how she manages that public judgment, and so much more. We had so much in common. It's such a raw conversation about the messiness and the beauty of life. So please enjoy Kelly Rizzo. Welcome, Kelly.
Thanks for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm really looking forward to talking to you. I remember I first came across your Instagram, I think it was years ago, when you were with Bob. And I remember seeing your profile and I was like, I feel like we have a lot that we would relate with each other on at the time. Yeah. So it's kind of funny in full circle that we're sitting here today. And, you know, unfortunately, we're probably going to be delving into like grief and some of our shared experiences that we were just talking about before we started recording. Yeah. Like circumstances are different, but it seems like we relate on a lot of things and feelings are sometimes the same.
Exactly.
So really excited to delve into all of that.
Thanks. I don't know if you remember, but I had messaged you. This was, I just looked today. It was 2020. One of my best friends had been following you, and she goes, I think you guys should be friends. Like, you guys have so much in common. You should reach out to her. I was like, I don't really do that. I think that's weird. I don't like reaching out to people I don't know. And then I sent you a message and I was like, hey, like, my friend told me to reach out to you. We have a lot in common. And you wrote back. You're like, yeah, we do. And blah, blah, blah. And then here we are 4 years later. So
I don't even remember that. Yeah. Oh, my God. Maybe that's when I came across. And then it was like COVID happened. And
exactly. So finally, four years later, almost, we're reconnecting.
Well, I'm sorry that I seem to have not followed up on that.
You're such a bad friend. I mean, no. It's all in perfect timing.
So let's rewind,
please,
to your relationship, because that's kind of, you know, where this all starts, I guess. Are you willing to share like how you met Bob?
Of course. Of course. I love talking about Bob. And that's one thing that I'm very grateful for, is that I always now have this opportunity and platform to share about him, because, you know, he deserves to have the Bob love shared forever. Mm-hmm. Even though I always say, like, I love keeping his legacy alive, but I'm like, I don't really even need to do that, because he kind of does it all on his own.
Yeah.
But we met the old fashioned way on social media.
No way.
Yeah. It was actually, and I'll give you the real story, which I usually give people the half real story. It was on Raya, but I didn't see him on there. He saw me. So he saw my profile and then went to my Instagram and then reached out to me on Instagram, but actually had a mutual friend, because I was living in Chicago at the time. Mm-hmm. And he reached out to this friend and was like, hey, do you know this Kelly Rizzo girl? Because he was in media. His friend was in media in Chicago. And he's like, yeah. And Bob goes, is she a bitch? And he goes, no, I think she's really nice. I don't know her well. Mm-hmm. And he goes, I want to send her a message. Can you let her know I'm going to send her a message? So this guy then reached out to me and was like, Bob Saget's going to DM you. And I'm like, what? And I think my first reaction, this sounds so horrible, but I was like, ew, why?
Mm-hmm.
And because I was like, there was a big age gap and wasn't really my typical
type.
What
was the age gap?
23.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was 36 at the time, and he was 59.
Mm-hmm.
When we really got together, it was 37 and 60, which was a lot, but he just presented in such a youthful way. I mean, he was more fun than I was half the time. Even at 65, like, we'd go to Vegas and he'd be like, let's go to the nightclubs and get a table and get bottle service. I was like, okay. But initially, when he reached out, he like invited me to a show or something, and I was just like, not really into it. But then we became friends, and then I was like, damn it, he's charming. Crap. I was like, I can't have a crush on Bob Saget. This is weird, you know? And
did you watch Full House growing up?
I did. But not, I wasn't a super fan. My sisters were more super fans and really were into it, where I was more of a casual watcher. And
I was a super fan, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, I certainly didn't think at the time watching it, or for me, it was more like we watched America's Funniest Home Videos every Sunday.
Oh, that's right. Thinking, I forgot about that.
Thinking that, like, that guy in the suit that's doing the funny voices, like, he's going to be my husband one day. Like, it was very weird, very surreal. But yeah. And then I just kind of gave in. I'm like, damn it. He's great. All right. I can't, I can't get away from this. Let's see what happens here.
I could relate to the age gap thing. I mean, that was obviously a huge thing in my relationship as well. Ours was bigger than 23, but I don't know if you felt this way. I mean, it sounds like you did. When I first met my ex, I felt the same way. I was like, he is more youthful than I am. Like, he just had this kind of young spirit about him, this energy, I think also because of like the nature of his work and everything.
You have to have a lot of energy.
So
and that
much.
Energy comes across as very youthful and very just like young and exciting.
Yes. Yeah. I think a lot of people have a hard time understanding, like, for a 30 something year old woman, what they would be attracted to in somebody older. But I'm also like, you look at these people who are successful, it's not just for no reason. Like, they have so many amazing qualities. But I'm curious, like, if you dealt with, you know, pushback and judgment around that.
In the very beginning, even from my family, from my friends, it was more my family, just because they truly love me and were concerned and just wanting to make sure I was doing the right thing, where they were like, but honey, he's so much older. Like, that's you know, what are you going to do? Like, what about the kids thing? Like, how's that going to work? And, you know, at the time when we first started dating, I was still a little on the fence about having kids. I knew I didn't want them.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew I wasn't a big kid fan.
Yeah.
But it's that thing that you just assume you're going to have them because that's yes. just what you do.
Yes.
And so I wanted the option.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that that option with him in the very beginning, it was difficult because he was older and already had three adult children. But then soon after we started dating, he was like, yeah, I'm not going to do that again. And mm-hmm. I was like, I don't blame you. I don't want to do it now. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want to do it at 70. You know what I mean? And so when that option was taken away, then, you know, my family was like, are you sure that you want to give up the kid thing? And then I was like, did you watch Sex and the City? I assume. Okay.
Every episode, probably 5,000 okay, so times. Then, I could quote every single
okay,
thing.
So yes. then you can relate to the saying when Carrie and yes. Charlotte were at the park and Charlotte's like, you know, she was dating Alexander Petrovsky mm-hmm. and she's like, how can you give up a baby for a man you hardly know?
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, well, why would I give up a man I love for a baby I hardly know I want?
So,
you know,
and I mic was drop.
Like, right. And I was like, yes, like here I have this wonderful man. So what, I'm going to give him up for a baby that I pretty sure I don't want in the first place. But let's say I do. So, okay. So a few more years go by and then hopefully I find somebody. And then what if that person ends up sucking and then something goes wrong and then I'm back to square one again. And then all of a sudden I'm 45 anyway. And then I gave up mm-hmm. something with a wonderful man.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was like, I just didn't feel right
mm-hmm.
giving him up for the mm-hmm. option of having a baby that I didn't think I even wanted.
Yeah. And I definitely want to bookmark that and revisit because yeah. I feel like this is a hot topic right now.
Yeah.
But please. I feel like that same logic applies to being in a relationship with somebody older because I had the same concerns from my family, again, just out of, you know, them wanting the best for me, wanting to make sure yeah. that like I wasn't going to get hurt and that I was being logical about everything, which when you're falling in love, logic is not always happening.
Very true.
But I remember, you know, people who did voice their concerns about the age difference would say, well, what about in 10 years and 15 years? And I'm like, nothing is guaranteed. So why, again, to your point, why would I not pursue this with this person who, you know, I really love just in the chance of, you know, something could happen in 10 or 15 years, 20 years where I'm right. the caretaker, you know, who knows? I could get hit by a bus tomorrow, not to be morbid, knock on wood. I don't want to put that juju out there.
No, but it's but, true. Tomorrow is never promised or guaranteed. Mm-hmm. We have no idea where life is going to take us. And I have been saying for years, even before I met Bob, because I went through a divorce before I met Bob.
Mm.
And then I went through a horrific, horrific breakup that was absolutely like earth shattering to me. And then I met Bob and I would say like, you can't plan life. Like what a joke that you think you can plan life. Like life has other plans. Life will, anytime you're like, I have these plans. I have it all figured out. Life is going to come and smack you in the face.
Mm-hmm.
So just do what feels right to you at that time. Like no relationship is guaranteed forever.
Mm-hmm.
And look at what I learned. You know, I had this relationship with this wonderful man for 6 years and something absolutely tragic happened to him very unexpectedly. And, but do I regret getting into that because of the ending of it? Absolutely not. I'm so grateful I did because I got to have this wonderful love with this amazing man that I will be forever grateful for. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, he changed me. I changed him. I made him happy. Like the last 6 years of his life, he was always saying, and his kids will say, like, were the happiest years of his life. So I'm grateful for that. So why would I, you know, think of, oh, well, the age gap. Yeah, of course, I did think about what if, you know, I would say to him all the time, like, well, you know, one day when I'm changing your diapers, you know, he'd always be like, don't even say that. He's like, first of all, I was like, so you think that you're going to be, I'll be 90 and you'll be 113.
Yeah.
Cause you'd be like, I'm going to outlive you. And I'd be like, you think you're going to be 113. And he's like, probably. Yeah. That was our like little joke that he was going to be around forever. And he wasn't,
mm-hmm.
but that's life. And you just have to be grateful and learn what you can from it.
Mm-hmm.
If you listened to the episode from last week with Amy Chang, then you heard us talking about colostrum. Colostrum is something that I actually started incorporating into my routine last year, and I absolutely love it. So if you want to know more, I'm going to break it down for you. So colostrum is basically the first nutrition that we receive in life. It contains all of the essential nutrients that our bodies need in order to thrive. So I've been taking Armour Colostrum. They use a proprietary concentrate of bovine colostrum that harnesses over 400 living bioactive nutrients that rebuild the barriers of your body and fuel cellular health for a host of research-backed health benefits. So it strengthens immunity, it helps to ignite your metabolism, it's got amazing anti-inflammatory properties, it helps to fortify gut health, it activates hair growth, skin radiance, it powers fitness performance and recovery, it has incredible, powerful anti-aging benefits. You know, I'm all about those micro habits, and this one really does it all. So the way that I take it is I just do a scoop a day with water. I love the blood orange flavor. Personally, that's my favorite. I also really like the watermelon. They have great individual packets, so it's so easy to pack if you are traveling or on the go. They also have unflavored if that is more of your jam. I have noticed things like better digestion, way better hair, skin, all of the things. So we've worked out a special offer for my audience. You can get 15% off your first order when you go to tryarmra.com/blonde or enter the code blonde to get 15% off. That's tryarmra.com/blonde or enter the code blonde for 15% off your first order. When it comes to deodorant, we have been doing it all wrong. So many deodorants on the market just mask odor, while Lumi is completely different. So Lumi is amazing. It is powered by mandelic acid to deliver 72-hour odor control, not just in your armpits, but in your entire body. In fact, Lumi was developed by an OBGYN who noticed that patients with normal BO were being misdiagnosed and mistreated. So she came up with Lumi, and it blocks odor all day and controls odor for up to 72 hours, unlike, like I said, traditional deodorants that just mask odor with a fragrance. So Lumi is more like a pre-odorant rather than a deodorant. It also is baking soda free, paraben free. It's pH balanced for safe use all over your body. And I love them because I love the scents. So my favorite is the clean tangerine. I also love the toasted coconut, especially as we're going into the warmer weather. And it is just unlike any deodorant that you've ever used because it stops odor essentially before it starts. So Lumi's starter pack is perfect for new customers. It comes with a solid stick deodorant, a cream tube deodorant, two free products of your choice, like a mini body wash and deodorant wipes, and free shipping. And as a special offer for my listeners, new customers get 15% off all Lumi products with my exclusive code. And if you combine the 15% off with the already discounted starter pack, that equals over 40% off the starter pack. So use the code BLONDE for 15% off your first purchase at LumiDeodorant.com. That's code BLONDE at LumiDeodorant.com.
About the kid thing, something that you said really resonated. Yeah, I saw you commented on my TikTok recently that it is absolutely crazy to me that people think that it is a woman's purpose to have children or that if you don't have children, you are missing out on the essential meaning of life and this love that you can't comprehend. And I understand that. I mean, everybody who has kids say you cannot even understand what it feels like until you have it. But
I get it. I mean, clearly, if no one had kids, there'd be a problem because we would not be continuing on with civilization.
Yes. And I always get the feedback like, oh, it's so selfish. And I'm like, I think the most selfish thing you could do is know that you don't want to have kids and have them anyway.
Yes.
And I 1,000%. Felt a lot like you where like when I turned 30, so I was so young, but I had that existential crisis where like I was a couple years sober turning 30. I thought that I was ancient at the time and that my eggs were shriveling up. And I was like, do I need to freeze them? And I didn't even have a relationship at that point or anything. But I remember somebody saying to me like, well, do you even want kids? And I just had this moment of clarity where I was like, no. And I had never thought about it because, similar to what you said, like, I always just assumed that it was going to be part of the picture because that was what you do.
Right.
You get married, you have kids, the end.
Yeah.
End of story.
There's no option that's a happy ending.
Yes.
Or a happily ever after.
Yeah.
Where that don't involve the kids and the white picket fence,
mm-hmm.
and the husband. That,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Is your same age where you're living on, yeah. you know, on your little porch together.
Yeah. That's, sounds like my worst nightmare, to be totally right. honest. I don't know about you, but I felt so relieved, like, once I made that decision. And I did kind of revisit it a few years into my relationship with Chuck, and he definitely didn't want them either. He had, like, older adult.
How many kids is he?
Two.
Okay.
But I remember talking to him and being like, I think maybe I'll freeze my eggs, because people were kind of getting in my head again. And he's like, well, where am I in this equation? Because, like, I don't want kids.
Yeah.
And then I just kind of put it to rest, because I was like, why would I put myself through that when, like, I know about myself that I don't.
Yeah. Bob had an interesting take when I brought up the egg freezing thing, like, before we, maybe it was around the time we got engaged or right before we got engaged. I brought it up briefly and he got so offended by it because he was very sensitive. And in his mind, he thought I was using that as an insurance policy for if we were to ever break up, that now I could go have kids with somebody else. And he's like, well, so you're thinking about doing this? I was like, no, that's not what I'm thinking about. I was like, to be honest, I don't know what I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm.
It's just people yes. are saying that this is what I need to do.
Yes.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And then he was a little offended by it. And then I'm like, I don't really want this anyway. And I'm like, I hear the process sucks. I'm like, forget it.
Yeah.
And I didn't have that existential dread at 30 because my mom had me and my sisters at me at 38 and my sisters at 41 and 43. So in my head, I always thought mm-hmm. if I have them at 40, whatever, that's fine one mm-hmm. day. You know, so to me at 30, I was like, oh, I've still got tons of time.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I met Bob and then I was in my late 30s, I was like, all right, this is probably a do or die moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, nope, yeah. not for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember so vividly, I was at the OBGYN and I was like, no, I don't want kids, because she was asking me and she said, well, I just want to tell you that I've had so many patients who sit there where you're sitting and say the same thing to me. And then they come back 3-5 years later and all that they want is a kid. And so those kind of messages would kind of seep yeah. into my psyche.
It's a little bit of shame. It's a little bit
yes.
of guilt and
judgment.
It's planting the seeds of future regret.
Yes.
Which you're like, that's not cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe just accept that I know what I'm talking about for myself.
Yeah.
And don't plant those seeds, because
yeah.
then no matter how confident you are, somebody saying that, you're like, oh shit, am I doing the right thing? Am I not? Like, should I be thinking? Did I think this through?
Mm-hmm.
But then it is very liberating when you come to the conclusion of, I'm very confident in my decision. I'm definitely doing the right thing. And I think for me, that happened even maybe after Bob passed away. I mean, I was always pretty confident, but then even after he passed away, and I was like, okay, I'm very glad I don't have a kid right now. Thank mm-hmm. God. And I'm really, like, now I can't even imagine doing that in the future. And then I want to ask you, do you have nieces or nephews?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Did that also help kind of solidify your decision? Like, when you see them and you just, not in a negative, in the positive way, because for me, I always felt I wanted kids because I'm like, I want to see my DNA running around. I want to see mm-hmm. like what I would look like as a little, you know, mm-hmm. like my kid.
Yeah.
And I want like a little kid to be like, I love you.
Mm-hmm.
And I have that now.
Mm-hmm.
So I have these yeah. little kids that look like me. They look mm-hmm. more like me than my sister.
Really?
People think they're my kids when we go out. It's really
That's
funny. And they're like, I love you, Auntie Cowie. You
Aww.
Know, so it's like, I have that.
Yeah.
And I don't have to do any of the work or
yes.
any of I don't have the stress. I don't have the anxiety. I don't have to do the parenting. I don't have to spend
yeah.
money. Like, it's, I'm just the funny aunt.
Yeah. Yes. I have one niece and nephew. I have one brother. And last time I was there, I remember thinking, this isn't, if they're listening, this is not a negative thing. But after a full day, by 6 o'clock, I was like, I'm tapping out. Like, I cannot.
You made it till 6.
Exhausting.
I don't make it till 6.
And it just solidified that I'm like, oh, yes, I love other people's children. And like, I really don't want it for myself. Yeah. And not just because of, you know, that experience. That does sound kind of bad, but like,
no, I get it. Know. When I'm with them, I mean, I love them more than I would give my life for them in a heartbeat, but mm-hmm. after 20 minutes, I'm like, yeah. I'm like, okay, well, they're very high energy, but mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, I don't know how you do this all yeah. day, every day. Even my parents who had three, they're like, the three of you were nowhere near as crazy as the two mm-hmm. of them.
That's so funny.
So I'm like, God, I don't know how anybody yeah. does it.
I feel like I just don't have the maternal thing. I see mm-hmm. babies and I'm like, meh. And like kids.
Zero
and I'm
interest.
Like, eh. And I think in that TikTok, I was like, I know that I don't want kids. Like, I know the sky is blue. And then, of course, people are like, well, the sky is more violet. And actually, you're not conceived. And I was yeah. like, okay.
I have three stepdaughters who I love very, very, very much. Mm-hmm. And they're just absolute angels. And, you know, they're in their 30s, so they're not kids. Mm-hmm. But I love them. And they give me that, you know, they still call me stepmommy Kelly. And so it's aww. Like I have that relationship, which yeah. is lovely, too. So it's like I've got the little kids, and then I've got like the adult kids, and mm-hmm. it's good enough for me.
Mm-hmm. So I want to rewind a little bit mm-hmm. to when Bob passed away. I mean, I would imagine that that is so traumatic. I think everybody's, yeah. one of everybody's biggest fears is, you know, getting that phone call.
Yeah.
So I wonder if you could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, it was my absolute biggest, because, you know, and I don't know if this is something you've dealt with too, but I've had such a massive issue with worry over my life.
Same.
And it comes very specifically in the someone in my family is going to die. Mm-hmm. Like car accident, horrible tragedy. My whole life I've been paralyzed with fear over that.
Mm.
To where Bob would always tell me, he's like, you have to stop this. The worry is insane. Like you're going to give yourself an autoimmune disease. Like you're going to give yourself cancer. Like stop.
Mm-hmm.
You have to stop. And I remember just right before everything happened with him, like even with him, like if I couldn't get a hold of him for however long, I'd start to get really worried. And I remember it was like the first time I put into practice or tried where that morning I wasn't, because he was in Florida. So it was 3 hours later where he was. And so, you know, it was like 10 a.m. for me or something. And I was like texting him and reaching out and he wasn't getting back to me. And I remember it was the first time that I was like, Everything's always fine.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I've worried, it's never been for a reason. Like I worry for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So this time's also going to be fine. So just calm down. And then it started getting, you know, I'm like, he had a plane to catch. Why isn't he at the airport? Like I was tracking his phone and it was still at the hotel. I was like, that's weird. And he was like the most reliable, responsible person. Never missed a flight, was never late.
Mm-hmm.
Never, you never had to worry or wonder where he was. And I was like, that's weird. And I was like, maybe he, you know, he's had an exhausting few days. Like maybe he just wanted to sleep in. But then I was like, this is weird. Something's weird. And my normal mind would go, okay, Kelly, you're just freaking out. Calm down. Everything's fine. But then there was, I was like, yeah, but I need to investigate. Mm-hmm. Something's weird. And I remember I did that dreaded calling the hotel to be like, can you call his room? And they're like, you know, and he was under an alias and I knew the alias.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, he has a, like, do not just, I'm like, they're like, we can't do that. I'm like, clearly I'm his wife. I know his alias. Like, mm-hmm. that's me.
Yeah.
And I was like, can you just call his room? And then I'll call back and you could tell me if, you know, you got a hold of him. And they're like, we didn't get a hold of him. And then it got to the point where I was like, can I speak with the manager? And then they agreed to do a wellness check. And at that point, I was like, just sick to my stomach. And then this was a 2-hour process. And it started getting escalating and escalating. And like, no one's really giving me any information. But it got to the point where I actually had a friend come over who was like kind of helping me with this because I was frantic.
Mm-hmm.
But and at this point, I'm in touch with Bob's girls, his ex-wife, like we're all kind of in a telephone game of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And they had said, they're like, we're sending somebody to like break the door down. And I was like, oh God, like that's horrible. And then it got to the point of, you know, paramedics are here. And at this point I'm like, okay, maybe he had a heart attack. Like maybe something happened, but like he's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. Like they'll take him to the hospital and he'll be okay. You know, at that point, you're still trying to look for potential routes where like everything's still fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had said, the paramedics are gone, but law enforcement is here. And I was like, that sounds bad. Like, that doesn't sound right, because why would law enforcement be if he's just went to the hospital, you know? And then finally it was literally, this was like 2 hours. Then finally somebody was like a security guard. Like, we're demanding. I was like, somebody tell me what's going on.
Yeah.
Even though like I didn't want to know or hear, but then I needed to hear. And then one of the security guards was like, we're so sorry. Unfortunately, he passed away. And then I just like, I mean, I was like an animal on the floor. I wasn't even like a human for a while. And then the worst part was I had to call Sherry, his ex-wife, because I wanted her to tell the girls. I didn't want them to hear it from me. So I had to tell her, and then she told them. And oh God, that was just, it was a crazy, crazy, crazy blur. That was literally the first time I ever just got through saying that without bursting into tears. So kind of proud of myself. Not that when you go through this, not that you get to a point where you're not even, crying is not even a weird thing anymore. Yeah. Like I would just cry all the time and I'd be like, this is just what I do now. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
It was weird because, you know, we're going through all that. And then, you know, his friends are calling, then his friends are all coming over. And I talked about this recently in like some TikTok that I did, but it was so strange because 15 minutes after I found out, it was on TMZ, meaning they had known even before I knew.
Wow.
And so that was what was really upsetting, was at that same time, like I'm dealing with this actual like massive shock and trauma and dealing with this. And then when it's out in the public, then I have like all, like normally you're able to keep your circle small.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just want certain people calling you. You only want to interact with certain people. You just want certain people coming over.
Yeah.
But then when it's in the media, now you have, you know, your phone's just nonstop and everyone's calling, everyone's texting, and it's just very overwhelming. And it was not a fun day.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, thank you.
It's very cathartic to talk about it. And it's, I'm like, as I said, I'm proud of myself. Not that there's anything wrong with the crying aspect, but the fact that I was able to get through it, not.
I know. I was going to say, I was very impressed. And I mean, I could relate it back to something that I went through, which is totally different circumstances, but I found my best friend murdered when I was 24, 2011. I don't know how old I was.
And dear God. Like you found her?
Yes.
Okay, so you found
her. Yeah.
Oh my God.
And, you know, not to compare them, but I was thinking about the steps.
No, but that's...
but it was like her boyfriend called me. He was worried about her. He had me go to her apartment and see if her car was there. And when I said, yes, her car is there, he said, go get the security guard downstairs and don't go up alone. Then I go up and we're knocking on, you know, and there were so many steps, but my brain, I don't know if this was how you experienced it. Like, you think something is wrong, but at the same time, you don't. Like, there's no way that, I don't know. So
the worst is going to happen.
Yeah.
There's no way this is going to end with your friend being in that position. There's no way this is going to end with Bob's not here anymore. Like, what?
Yeah.
That's not an option. That's not feasible.
Yes. Which is so interesting because I feel like we have evolved to have this like worst case scenario thing for survival.
Right.
But when that's happening, like I could relate to what you said where it's just kind of like a blur, you know? And
so you went through the worst because that was almost my nightmare. I was saying, well, at least I didn't find him.
Mm-hmm.
And at least I didn't have to see, and I mean, obviously, I don't know the circumstances of how you found your friend, but, you know, the one thing I'm grateful for is that Bob was very peaceful. They found him very peacefully in his bed, like sleeping.
Yeah.
You know, it was not a distressed situation.
Yeah.
Even though he had his, you know, because he had fallen, so he had his head injury, but like they found him very peacefully. So I'm very grateful for that. But still, the thought of seeing him in that way, like I know he wouldn't have wanted that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm very grateful that like I wasn't there in that sense.
Yeah.
So the fact that you witnessed something like that firsthand, I can't even imagine.
Yeah. I mean, they're both insanely traumatic, I think, in, you know, in different ways. And when I think of that situation, what you're saying makes sense to me. And at the same time, when I think of like, if that were my partner, I feel like it would be so hard not being there, like being so far
right.
away.
Right. Well, part of me was like, well, you do feel the, if I had been there,
yeah.
then, you know, you could have helped, you could have done something. Maybe it wouldn't have happened to begin with, because maybe he wouldn't have gotten up to go to the bathroom in that moment or something, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it is. But then I go back to why I didn't feel the guilt was, it would have been one thing if, let's say, I was supposed to have been there and right. then I canceled the trip last minute or something. But like, yeah. I was never supposed to be there. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a trip that I was ever going on. So I felt a little bit better about that. And then, of course, like you want to be there like for the last moments of your loved one. But at the same time, I'm like, wasn't supposed to be there. Mm-hmm. He probably wouldn't have wanted me to be there. He wouldn't have wanted me to see him like that. So,
yeah. When it comes to my style and pieces that I buy, versatility is key. I like to be able to walk out of the door in the morning and not have to change whether I'm going to Pilates, to lunch, to recording a podcast, or whatever I have in store in my day. And I have been loving M by Maidenform because I can do exactly that. I can wear the same piece to yoga or Pilates, and then I can throw a sweater or a coat over it and still look cute throughout the day. So my favorite that I've been wearing all the time is the M Seamless Crop Tank. This is like a wireless bralette. It is so comfortable. It's not super, super cropped, so it can still kind of look like a top. Like I said, if you put a coat or a sweater over it, they have really cute colors and it's just seamless. So M is a collection from Maidenform, a brand with 100 years of innovation and category leadership. They basically wrote the book on bras, and M is the next juicy chapter. You really have to feel it to believe it. The fabrics are so yummy, so buttery soft, and they feel way more expensive than they are. And they make on-trend designs made from stretchy, comfy fabrics in incredible colors. And like I said, it can be worn as innerwear or outerwear. You can style it to your taste. You can basically create looks that serve for everybody or nobody to see. So visit maidenform.com and use the code BLONDEFILES20 at checkout for 20% off your first purchase. That's maidenform.com and the code is BLONDEFILES20 for 20% off your first order. This might surprise some people, but I do not like getting manicures and pedicures. I find that they are so time consuming, literally hours out of my day that I don't necessarily have to waste just sitting there getting my toes and my nails done. But I've figured out how to space out my manicures, so I'm only getting them every 4 to 6 weeks or so. Pedicures, though, only last me a few weeks, so I had to find a solution where I wasn't having to go to the salon every couple weeks, and that is where Olive and June's Pedi system comes in. It has everything that you need for a salon quality pedicure in one box. It has salon grade tools that are designed just for do it yourself. You can customize your choice of 6 polishes. The polish doesn't chip and lasts 7 days or more. And it's so easy to get salon worthy nails at home. So this has actually turned into a self-care thing that I enjoy doing and I kind of look forward to because I have to be present and in the moment. I'm generally not distracted, so it's almost kind of meditative for me. They also have the best colors and it's just more time and cost efficient. You're not wasting all that time going to and from your nail place and you are saving money. I love Olive and June's quick dry. It dries in about a minute. It has full coverage in 1 to 2 coats, and it's offered in 15 cruelty-free and vegan polishes. So definitely check that out. So right now you can visit oliveandjune.com/blonde for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/blonde for 20% off your first mani system. What was the grief roller coaster like for you?
It was, well, the first week was, I mean, just so incredibly traumatic. And I mean, I had just gotten over COVID. And so I was still had like, it sent that into like a spiral. I had 103 fever all week. That week, like leading up to his funeral, it was just a nightmare. I felt absolutely horrible. And like, I thought I was going to die. And then I didn't, there was a little part of me that was like, nah, this can't be real. Like, he's coming home. Like, come mm-hmm. on, this is not, because I hadn't seen him, mm. you know? And then when I actually saw him at the funeral, then I was like, okay, this is real. This is no joke. Like, this is legit. And then it was a little bit of a, until we knew what happened to him, because we didn't know. We just assumed like it was a heart attack or a stroke or something until we found out that he had fallen, which mm-hmm. was 2 to 3 weeks later. So like that whole time, there was all of this just weird feeling of like, well, what happened? You know, and so you couldn't really be at peace until you knew what happened. And then when we found out what happened, as hard as it was to reconcile that, you know, it was this weird freak accident. And then I was like, was he in pain? Was he scared? And like, you think all of these things. But then when we got to the point where we kind of realized that we were, even though it was horrible, we were at peace with that. Like, this is what happened. Mm-hmm. It is what it is. There's just nothing we could do to change it. It was a freak accident that they happened, unfortunately. And this is the story.
Like some level of acceptance.
Exactly. So I was in a place very early on. And I know this is not necessarily typical, especially if, God forbid, you know, somebody like loses a child or something. I know that's a completely different ballgame. But because of the fact that Bob had lived 65 years on this planet and did so much in his time to make the world a better place and to make people so happy and to bring joy and laughter to millions of people over 40 years, that there was something in me that was like, that was his story. And he made the world a better place. And I'm just lucky to have been a part of it for the time that I was. And I was just so, I was engulfed in this immense gratitude from so early on that that kind of overshadowed anything else in terms of, you know, regret. And like, I was sad. I missed him. Mm-hmm. But I was at peace with it mm-hmm. from very early on. And mm-hmm. so I think the acceptance and the peace and like the gratitude made it so much just a healthy process for me. Mm-hmm. So it was still sad. It was, but there was no like weird destructive behavior. I wasn't in denial. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't reclusive. I wasn't retreating into a hole. Like, I was doing it in a very healthy way. And I mm-hmm. had the most incredible support system of, you know, his daughters and my family and some of his friends, that it was tolerable, if mm-hmm. that makes sense. And mm-hmm. that, I don't know if that's like the best word to use, but mm-hmm. where I was able to get through it in a healthy way because I was at peace.
Mm-hmm. That's an amazing perspective to have.
And I know it's not, that's not feasible for everybody.
Yeah.
But it's that's, that was just,
it's very
my
admirable
journey, you know?
Though. I mean,
thank you.
I just don't know that I would be able to muster that, but I feel like you don't know what you're capable of until you are in these situations, yeah. you know? And I remember I had a therapist on my podcast a few years ago. I reference this all the time, but she said, like, she was actually talking about worry and thinking about worst case scenario and what if this happens? What if that happens? And she said, the version of you that can handle that thing, if and when it happens, will be born into existence the moment that that happens.
Yeah.
Meaning you meet yourself where you are, like you become who you need to be in that moment.
Yeah.
And that always stuck with me because even in my own life, like that's been the case. My big thing that I struggle with is fear, similarly to you.
Yeah. Worry and fear go hand in hand.
Yes. Yeah. Fear, worry, same thing with like loved ones and oh my God, they're not answering the phone. And I always kind of thought that that went back to what happened with my friend, but I think it started even before that.
If it didn't happen before that, I'd be like, yes. That would have done it.
Yeah. And I have explored that a lot in therapy. But when I look back on my life, like, and some of the worst things that have happened, even that, you know, a version of myself was born in that moment that learned how to handle that, you know, right. And different versions have been born along the way, like as it's come out in different ways. And
yeah, it's so true, because you say to yourself like, oh my God, if that were to happen to me, like people would say to me like, oh my God, if I ever lost my husband, like I wouldn't be, I'm like, yeah, well, I said that too.
Yeah.
And then
but what are your options?
Right. And then you do it, you deal with it. And And the other thing I'm grateful for is, you know, I always have the fear of, like, God forbid, like, when something happens to my parents one day. And as horrific as I know that will be one day, because I went through what I went through with Bob, I know, I'm not saying it'll be easy, but I'll be better equipped because I felt that pain. Like, if you've never, if you've lived your whole life and nothing bad has ever happened to you and everything's been great, and, like, you've never had this, like, gut punch and this, like, knife in your heart before. And then when it happens the first time and you survive it, then you're like, okay, I don't want the knife in my heart again, but at least if it's there, like, I'll know what it feels like, you know? So I feel slightly more equipped to handle it.
Were there any things that you were doing prior to that happening that you feel like did equip you? Not that you could ever imagine that happening, but, like, were you meditating, like, or doing yoga? Like, is there anything that made you feel resilient and strong?
I know that you're looking for a practical thing that could help other people going through, but what helped me prior to was just having a very, very strong support system and knowing that I had, like, no matter what, like, especially my sister, Kristen, is just my angel on earth. And I can't even, she's a built-in therapist. She's a built-in best friend. She's built-in everything. So having my sister and my family, I knew that because I had gone through things in the past and they helped me through it, I was like, all right, if anything does happen, I know I have them. And same thing. Now that this happened, I know going forward, if anything else does happen, at least I have that support. So I think the most important thing possible, and always my advice, is just making sure that you're really surrounded by people who truly have your best interest at heart and will be there for you no matter what. Because when, you know, shit hits the fan, you know, you need, like, that trust tree and that circle around you.
The trust tree.
That's going to be there for you no matter what. And some people maybe don't surround themselves with the best people always. And then when they go through a really hard time and they're like, I don't have the support, no one's there for me. It's like, you know, cultivating those relationships throughout your life is what's, I think, the most important thing. So when you need them, they're there.
Yeah, that is so important. I think a lot of us struggle when it comes to snacking. So what I mean by that is we eat a really good breakfast, lunch, and dinner. But then when it comes to reach for a snack, it's like all of the wheels come off. At least that's what happened for me in the past, because I would reach for a really sugary protein bar or a smoothie, which, nothing wrong with a bar or a smoothie, and I still do enjoy those things sometimes. But when I switched to snacking on protein, it totally changed the game for me, and I didn't even realize how much stress my body was under by these blood sugar spikes and crashes from the things that I was snacking on before. So this is where Chomps come in. Chomps are my go-to. They have zero sugar. They have up to 12 grams of protein. They are low carb. They have amazing flavors. They come in three types of meat. They have grass-fed and finished beef, venison, and free-range turkey. The turkey are my favorite. I just had one right before I did this. Chomps are simply made with natural ingredients that you can feel good about. They're filled with the highest quality, sustainably sourced meat without any fillers, so you can feel good about what you're snacking on. And they come in nine delicious flavors, so there is a healthy snack option for everyone. You can grab a variety pack. You can snack with things like hummus. You can have them just as is, which is what I like to do. And it just makes such a huge difference because I am satiated. I'm not getting that blood sugar spike. I'm not having that crash in the middle of the day. I just am satisfying my hunger, giving my body what it needs. And then I can reach for other things. I can have crackers or fruit or anything like that without getting that crazy spike. So right now, Chomps is offering my listeners 20% off your first order and free shipping when you go to chomps.com/blonde. Again, go to chomps.com/blonde to see all the delicious flavors and get 20% off your first order and free shipping. That's chomps.com/blonde. Don't forget to use my link so they know I sent you. If you haven't heard of Nuda yet, allow me to upgrade your life. So by now you all know that I am
very skincare conscious, and I truly care about the effectiveness and the quality of the products that I'm using. And on top of that, me and sun damage are not friends. You probably know that I was big into tanning beds and just tanning in general when I was younger, and that is my one regret in life. So in light of this, I've partnered with Nuda Sunless, a sunless skin essentials brand that is professionally backed and carries everything from self-tan, skincare, cosmetics, to sun care. So if you're looking for a healthy way to bronze and glow without the fear of sun damage, Nuda is for you, because glowing skin should not mean damaging it. So I am absolutely obsessed with their tanning water mousse. I use the medium to dark, and it is the perfect bronze color. It's so easy to apply, so much easier than a cream, in my opinion. And I just get this perfect tan that looks so natural. And I have to say, for me, equally as important as the tan is the removal of the tan. And finally, I have a product that exfoliates the skin. It strips your tan down in an instant, so you can erase your old tan residue and prime your skin for the next application. Something that I don't like about tanning sometimes is that period when your tan is old, but you're not quite ready for a new one because you have that residue. Well, problem solved with the Sunless Tan Remover. It is amazing. Unlock the secret to overall radiant skin with an exclusive offer for the Blonde Files listeners. You can visit Nuda.com and use the code BLONDE for 20% off your order. Discover the skin-loving formulas of Nuda and step into your healthy glow today. That's Nuda, your go-to for all things radiant, sunless skin.
Okay, so we're fast forwarding a little bit to now. Mm-hmm. And now you've been, you know, open about the fact that you're dating again and everything. What has that process been like for you? Because I would imagine after something so traumatic, right, like that, I just know for myself, if that happened, like, I would feel even more anxious about becoming attached to somebody, and all of the worries and everything that, yeah, come with that.
Well, there's two aspects of this. The one aspect is, and this is something I don't think I've ever talked about publicly, but because of my first divorce, where in a sense, like, everything was fine, and then literally one day my ex-husband at the time woke up one day and he's like, I don't want to be married anymore. Then I had this amazing relationship that, you know, 2-year relationship. We were living together. We just bought a new home together. Didn't even have a fight in 2 years. It was like perfect, perfect, happy as can be. And the day before I moved into our new house, he goes, I can't do this anymore. Yeah.
What was his reason for that? Did he have one?
I think it was a little bit of an ego thing.
Mm.
His excuse was, I don't think you want to be a mom and I want to be a dad. And I was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Me?
What do you mean? And of course, looking back, I was like, thank God. Because yes, yeah, he was right.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the time, I was like, because I had never said at the time I didn't want to be a mom. But anyway, and then, you know, I married Bob, and of course, everything with, you know, Bob was wonderful. Like, what happened with him was not his fault, but it was still getting the rug ripped out from under me. Yeah. So I had these three huge relationships in my life where the rug was ripped out from under me with no warning, and where it wasn't like I had done something to provoke this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that I'm trying now with my current relationship. And God bless him that he doesn't have to be faced with this every day, because, you know, this is something that it's like I put on my sister or like my friends. But having that fear of just, even when things seem great, the rug can just be ripped out from under you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's my biggest challenge in like the relationship sense of, you know, just trying to move forward and not carry the past trauma that is, you know, my current boyfriend. That's not his fault. That's not his problem. Like, he shouldn't have to suffer because of stuff that happened to me in the past, you know? So that's something that I'm just trying to be like, okay, every situation is independent. Just because that happened in the past does not mean it's going to happen in the future.
Yeah.
In terms of moving on after the death of your spouse, that was a whole other battle in a sense, because there's a lot of emotions with that. There's a lot of guilt, you know, you feel in the very beginning, not that I thought about dating in the very beginning, but when the first few times you even start thinking about it, even if it's a year later, you're like, I feel like I'm cheating on him. Am I cheating on him? Just by even thinking about this, like, how could I even think about this? But then I really turned a big corner when I talked to Bob's girls and they gave me, I mean, I know I didn't need their permission, but I wanted their blessing. And when I got their full on blessing, that they were like, Kelly, we love you. We trust you. He would want you to be happy. Because I didn't picture him, earthly Bob would have been like, how dare you? Heavenly Bob would want me to be happy.
Right.
And like, I had to like separate the two of them. Like, of course, the Bob that exists now would want me to be happy. But it was hard for me to separate from like the Bob that I knew. You know, who would be like, I knew it. How dare you? So, you know, when his girls were like, of course he would want you to be happy. We love you. We want you to be happy. You deserve it. Please be happy. Then I'm like, all right, I have this permission. So.
And then you get the public's judgment.
Right. And you know what? I was really concerned about it, but because I was like, everyone loves Bob. Everyone feels like they know Bob. He's America's dad. What if everyone's like, how could you move on from our dad? You know, like, how could you do this to Danny Tanner? And when I got just such overwhelming love and support from the public, once again, not that I needed that, but it was very nice. There's always going to be the one or two people who comment and are like, me, so soon? I'm like, it's been 2 years. Yeah. Like,
I feel like that happened to like Amanda Klutz too, right? And I know that you guys are friends.
Yeah, and that's something that you hear the 100 positive comments, but the one negative one is like,
yes.
You know, but ultimately all that mattered to me 100% were his girls and if I felt ready. And then when I felt ready and I knew I had the blessing from his girls, and I'm like, it doesn't matter what anybody else says. So,
yeah. Well, and now you have a new podcast, which we have to talk about.
Oh,
and I'm going on it as well. So, well,
I'm
sure
very excited for that.
Announce. We're going to. Yeah. So tell us about.
To be continued.
Yes, exactly. Tell us about the podcast and like how the idea of that came to fruition.
So as I'm sure you've probably experienced in your life, a lot of these difficult conversations, especially around grief, are still a little taboo. People don't always want to talk about them. People don't know how to talk about it. And that's something that I learned after losing someone, is that I never really experienced it before. And I learned what was helpful for me and how people showed up or didn't show up for me, or what worked and what didn't work. And then I realized, I'm like, all those years before when other people I knew lost people, I'm like, I probably was a shitty friend. I probably didn't do all the right stuff. I probably didn't do what was most helpful for them. So I wanted to create comfort food, because obviously I have a big food background. So I was like, how can I bring food and grief together? And they do go together very well. So on comfort food, I have these conversations with people who have gone through, it's not always grief necessarily, but some sort of a difficult time, a loss of a loved one, a divorce, just something difficult in their life, you know, recovery, anything that where they're like, I went through this, I overcame it, and I have some advice to give. So that way, when people listen to this, not only if they're going through it, they have helpful tips and tricks and they can really understand it. But if they have friends that are going through it, how can they best show up for their friends? But the whole point is, now we get to do this while eating my guest's favorite comfort food. We actually eat their comfort food.
I think I'm having French fries. And then I saw, didn't Heidi DeMille, I don't know how to pronounce her last name. She had fries, right?
She did have French fries.
I was like, ooh, maybe I need to change it.
Well,
but French
you
fries
are welcome to change it. We have time. And I do want to know specifically what kind of fries, but we can get into that. But yeah, it's just been so wonderful to have these conversations with people who, you know, a lot of them, I do love having comedians on, because I learned that gallows humor and laughter through these difficult times is one of the most helpful things. You know, being married to a comedian, I thankfully was able to experience that. So, you know, I've had on a lot of Bob's friends, a lot of comedians, and just people who have gone through tough times that really are open about sharing their stories. And that's been so meaningful. So I'm very grateful that you're going to come on and share your story, which is just absolutely going to be so helpful to so many. And I know it's so wonderful that you've been so open about sharing everything.
Thank you. Well, likewise. I mean, I think to your point, like, grief and really anything difficult, like still so taboo. But yeah. I think grief particularly, like people don't go near it.
Yeah.
And so I would imagine going through it, it's probably kind of isolating because people don't know how to be around you and right. how to be helpful. And, you know, I was going to ask, what were some helpful things that people did? But people should just go to your podcast and listen to get the nuance because yeah. every situation is different. And it sounds like the overarching thing is that, you know, you had this built-in support system. And mm-hmm. I would imagine people are going to say the wrong thing and do the wrong thing, but you know that their intention was there, right? And they were just there to help you however they could.
Right. And I will say, yes, obviously, all of my guests have very different outlooks and advice to give mm-hmm. and different journeys that you can learn so much from. You know, like for instance, John Mayer, he had never lost anyone before Bob.
Mm.
And his take on loss now that he's experienced this world, because, you know, he's very poetic and very mm-hmm. existential, his take on it is just so brilliant. So to hear his take, and then I had on that I'll give some very practical advice.
Mm-hmm.
Rabbi Steve Leder, who has been at the deathbed of over 1,000 people, he said, when people are grieving, he said, just show up as your authentic self. He goes, if you're a hugger, hug. If you're a baker, bake. If you're a crier, cry. If you're a laugher, laugh. Like whatever it is that is you, show up as that person.
Hmm.
Because that's all people crave when they're grieving is just authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
And people can sense if you're being fake.
Mm-hmm.
So just show up as your real authentic self and just be you. And that's the best thing you can do.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's amazing advice.
Yeah.
Like, so simple. Like, who would have thought?
Right?
Yeah.
And it's true.
Yeah.
You know, because sometimes you're like, oh, I don't know what to say. It's like,
yes.
just say
and
what
then you,
you
try to say right. something that you think is going to be.
Yeah. Like Bob was that person who, when somebody would lose somebody, where I would maybe be like, oh, I don't know what to, I don't want to bother them. I'm just going to,
yeah.
oh, they don't want to hear from me. Bob would charge head wow. first. Like he would just full force he would call them, show up at their house. Like, I'm here. Here's what I can do. Like, I'm here to help. And it was always so amazing to me. I'm like, he wasn't uncomfortable around it.
Mm-hmm.
And so just to have these conversations that hopefully can make people more comfortable around it.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Well, I can't wait to continue the conversation. Tell everybody where they can find your podcast.
Yeah.
Follow you. Thank you.
Yeah. So it's Comfort Food with Kelly Rizzo, wherever you get your podcasts. And all my social media is at Eat Travel Rock. So
amazing.
Very simple. Food, travel, music. If you like any of those three things.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. And if you liked it, and if you like the show in general, please take a second to rate, review, and subscribe. It goes a long way, and it's actually the best way to support the show. Also, if you want to see more about each episode, you can head over to the Blonde Files podcast on Instagram. You can go to ariellaurie.com. And I'm always posting about each episode over on my personal page at ariellaurie.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.